Dearest citizens, for you to have been chosen to hear this message means that the Holy Inquisition has seen fit to inform you of the unseen and unforgivable horrors of our universe. Most humble citizens should never in their lives be forced to hear or think of the maddening forces which live beyond our realm. But as agents of the Inquisition, some of us must stand resolute as the shining light against any forms of heretical darkness. What I am to describe to you is the ineffable impossibility of the warp, a realm both beneath, beyond, and within our own, which in its own way permeates every aspect of our lives, just as we permeate it. The entities which reside in and rule over the warp are to be feared, but we are in a perilous position where we must understand every aspect of their being in order to best combat their foul machinations. Knowledge is power, and it is to be our key in defeating any demonic incursions which would slither out of the ephemeral hellscape of the warp. Today, I shall provide you with an overview of what the warp actually is, before covering the nature of the capricious denizens who lurk within it. Finally, I shall reveal to you the secrets of the Dark Pantheon, where I will uncover the horrific existence of the very chaos gods themselves. With that all in mind, please sit back and relax. You are to hear of forbidden information today, and if you are ever inclined to misuse this, then know that an inquisitor will gladly pay you a righteous visit in the name of the Emperor. For us to unravel the mysteries and horrors of the warp, we must understand it on a fundamental level. To begin, the first point to know is that the warp is comprised solely of emotion and pure psychic energy. Every single diabolical part of this dimension has its source in the emotions and energies of the physical world that we find ourselves in. Everything from the smallest fleck of blood-stained sand upon a demonic world to the very powers of the chaos gods themselves has found its origins from the living creatures of our own reality. We have unknowingly given these demons not only a form, but we have also empowered them through our continued overindulgences into our feelings. Whether we intended to do so or not, the warp will reflect the true nature of humanity in the most twisted, sick, and perverse image. And so it is not uncommon for heretical followers to attempt to consort with the warp due to them resonating with the strange powers found there. In some ways, this is rather logical. If a cultist is incredibly violent and bloodthirsty, then it is of no wonder that they will hear the call of the blood god, as he will feel that these cornate demons truly understand him. The fool, however, does not realize that he is a part of the cause as to why these demons exist, for if he never felt the overwhelming urge to kill, maim, and burn, then his own psychic emanations would not have empowered the Lord of Skulls. Even though each individual may only possess an incomparably meek soul, we must remember that every living being throughout the galaxy contributes to the warp, and so the untold trillions who have lived and died throughout history have all unknowingly contributed to the creation of the warp as we know it today. Whilst the psychic ripples of our mortal existence may produce the actual landscape and foundational realm of the warp, we must now ask, is this also the source of the demons themselves? The unfortunate answer to this is yes. When an emotion, faith, or even a concept grows strong enough within reality, then the psychic forces produced from this will also have a corresponding growth within the warp. The burgeoning psychic entity will become something which we can only describe as a demon. We do not know exactly when a demon becomes sentient, and we have no comprehensive theories as to how much of a physical belief is required to form a demon. But we do know that as a thought or concept grows stronger in our own realm, thus too does the demon become empowered, growing stronger and stronger. With that in mind, it is important to understand that there is to be a linear relationship between heretical worship within reality and with the strength of demons within the warp. And it is from this reason why the Inquisition is forced to quell and exterminate any chaotic followers wherever they are found, lest they fuel the horrific demonic forces who only ever seek to bring humanity to its knees. Now, this all must not be misconstrued. The previous point, whilst true, does not mean that each exuberantly bubbling demon of Nurgle can be traced back to a single instance of somebody not washing their hands. Instead, you must realize that the combined emotional energies and conscious feelings behind those thoughts and actions are what contribute to the disgusting powers of the chaos god Nurgle. It is then from this foul well of power that he may draw from to manifest new demons himself, or to simply produce new sources of pestilent plague to inflict upon the galaxy. Thus we must acknowledge that even though all living and sentient creatures give power to the warp, that the beneficiary of these powers is the one who can manipulate and shape it to fit their most heinous of desires. As an extension of the previous points, please be aware that within the warp, there is no such thing as empty space. Every single part of the immaterial realm will hold the potential for all manner of strange and terrible entities to appear. This is not simply limited to demonic forces, but should a powerful enough creature desire it, then they could alter and weave the warp in such a way that they produce an entire planet for themselves to reside upon. While some inquisitorial members may believe that they hold a firm grasp in demonology, this tends to be rather limited to real space incursions or demonic outbreaks due to heretical cult worship. It is far harder for us as humans to claim to be experts in the nature of demons whilst within the warp, as by its very nature, the immaterium will not conform to that of what we know, and it will instead change and bend itself to rack our humble minds. Furthermore, the demons themselves will gladly and gleefully jostle and shake the tides of the warp if they know that it would hinder the work of a mortal, since to them we are nothing but fickle playthings to be used and toyed with until our eventual demise. This ever-shifting property of the warp is to be of a particular importance to the navigators, who steer the mighty barges of the imperial fleets throughout the tumultuous oceans of immaterial energy within the warp. To them, they must understand that even though they may see a course through this hellscape as appearing relatively stable, that they do not live in this realm, and that even their own mutated minds cannot truly comprehend the undulating sway of unreality. Any area of the warp, no matter how clear and navigable it seems, could change in but an instant, with huge storms manifesting themselves around a ship to ensnare the poor crews for a lifetime. Equally, were it not for the mighty Geller fields which shield the Imperial vessels, horrific demonic impossibilities would rapidly materialize themselves within the relative safety of these ships, where they would seek only to rip and tear whoever they found to pieces before claiming their very souls as a prized trophy. From here, it is best that I describe to you the nature of the maleficent entities which are to be found within the warp. By the grace of the Emperor, we must pray that you will never find yourself encountering one of the many demonic denizens, but one can never be too careful. And we must be prepared for any possibility, no matter how horrific it may seem. Firstly, we must understand that the warp is inhabited and ruled over by four entities who hold an unmatched level of power within this realm. These creatures will go by many names, but most commonly they are referred as the Chaos Gods, and they are named thusly: Khorne, the Blood God, Nurgle, the Plague Father, Tzeentch, the Changer of Ways, and Slaanesh, the Prince of Pleasure. These four, just like everything else within the warp, are made up of psychic energies. However, they each act as something akin to a focal point for a specific set of emotions within reality. What I mean by this is that the four gods can almost be seen as conceptual beings, in that they will represent the sheer essence of an emotion, and they will express this within their very nature, in their hellish domains, and in their subservient demonic followers, who each act as extensions of themselves. I shall soon elucidate further into the details of each of the gods, but for now, we will learn more of their role within the warp. Whilst we may be referring to these entities as gods, it would be highly heretical to ever consider them as being true divine forces. The imperial cult is clear in that the emperor acts as our sole deity, and if you are a follower of Mars, then you are permitted to hold in your beliefs of the Holy Trinity. With that being said, however, within the chaos of the warp, it is only appropriate for us to label these forces as gods, as their level of power is almost completely unshackled, which allows them to bend the immaterium to meet their every whim and desire. There is nothing that cannot be achieved by the dark gods, should they wish it into existence. If Slaanesh requires a new planet-sized palace to lounge in, then it is near effortless for them to conjure it forth from the frothing tides of their immaterial hellscape. Similarly, if Nurgle sees his great gardens as appearing somewhat meek, then on but a single thought, he can expand it to the size of a star sector, simply to grow and nurture new noxious and pestilent plagues to inflict upon the galaxy. With this in mind, it is obvious that the gods are truly unmatched to all but themselves within the warp. And so it is of no wonder that they most often find themselves at great odds with each other. There is a concept known as the Great Game, which exists within the infernal hellscape of the warp, and it represents the eternal struggle and conflict found between the dark gods as they each pursue dominance over one another. It would likely be impossible for one of the gods to actually achieve this goal. It has still resulted in much of the warp becoming more reminiscent of a battleground than of anything else. They will wage cataclysmic, reality-breaking wars against each other's realms, throwing hordes of demonic forces into one another purely to see their deific sibling fall from grace. A god being utterly defeated is simply not possible, however. Remember that each of them has derived their power from every sentient life form throughout the long course of history, and the emotions which empower them are utterly innate to mortals, so there will never be a time where they are not constantly being swelled by these psychic powers. Nevertheless, it will not stop the gods from trying to defeat each other. Khorne may seek to destroy and burn down the indecipherable libraries of Tzeentch. Nurgle may wish to see the pleasure palaces of Slaanesh drown in pestilent muck, but these attempts will never be of a sufficient enough strength to fully dethrone a god from their lofty position within the pantheon. They will obviously be irate at the meddlesome interference of the other gods and will retaliate, but this is simply the nature of the Great Game. It is an eternal war within unreality, with no goal to ever be achieved, only carnage and ephemeral conflict. As I have previously alluded to, each god is fueled by a limited range of emotional forces from mortal beings, and because of this, they are incredibly single-minded and monomaniacal when it comes to their desires. In this way, the actions of the gods can be somewhat predictable, which makes it slightly easier for inquisitorial agents to exorcise and banish demonic incursions when they are encountered within reality. For example, if a district of a hive city is suddenly racked with a disgusting, noxious disease which reduces all life to a massless sludge, then this could only have ever been the work of the Plague Father Nurgle. As such, the Inquisition will be able to effectively and appropriately respond to this in a manner which is best suited for quelling a Nurglite influence. Just as the warp is ever-changing, so must be our tactics in opposing it. Each day, demonologists within the inquisitorial fortresses throughout the galaxy will develop new esoteric methods for banishing demons, but even the most senior of agents would relinquish the truth that there is likely no possibility for us to ever be free from the taint of those infernal creatures forever. Just as each chaos god will manifest and create demons in their own image, so too will they shape the landscapes around them to best suit their desires. The warp has no true physical dimensions, and its geography would be impossible to map given the ever-shifting nature of this realm. However, we can still identify several distinct areas within the Immaterium. Each of the gods will rule over a vast area which they will call their domain. It will be where they have formed their palaces and romping grounds, and where you would find the endless hordes of lesser demons who enact their gods' every fickle directive. Each realm will be entirely different from one another, as they have been made to reflect the essence of their ruling god. For example, the enticing and suggestive circles of seduction within the realm of Slaanesh could never be compared to the septic abyss found within the deepest depths of Nurgle's Garden of Blight. Between their own personal realms, there exists a proverbial no man's land of the warp, known as the Formless Wastes. These foreboding regions are simply made up of tidal warp energies which sometimes crash into strange landscapes, all of which reflect the passing emotional and psychic energies of mortals within real space. Odd stairways which connect in impossible geometric arrangements will exist to lead you to nowhere, and mysterious walking fortresses made of oozing tar will trudge forth before finally collapsing into a sea of thick ichor. Every possible dream and every eventual nightmare can be found in this realm, and some say that the utter madness here can sometimes give rise to the secrets of reality if one knows of where to look. These wastes are where the undivided and abandoned demons of chaos will lurk. The lesser servants to the dark gods will reside within their own plane, always at the heel of their master. However, there are some entities which do not have a god, and these should be seen as more of a pure manifestation of chaos itself. Creatures known as Furies will swoop about this domain in great flocks. They will have come into existence by pure chance as life formed from the twisted energies of the warp, but they gain power by feasting upon more primal emotions such as fear and dread of not knowing what lurks out in the dark. When a human dies, their soul will appear in the warp as a wisp. They will float as nothing but a small orb of light, with the echoes of their life softly calling out into the ocean of chaos around them. The Furies will dive down and prey upon these unfortunate beings, either to devour the soul themselves or to produce it as a gift to a greater demonic entity in the hopes that it brings them some praise with their patron god. Within the inquisitorial libraries, we hold many sacred texts from times long forgotten by man. However, there is one which is held in the most forbidden of vaults, and it is known as the Liber Malefic. This tome contains a lost account from an ancient witch hunter who, whilst in a comatose state, reportedly traversed the tainted realm of the warp, and he summarized his travels with the following statement.
As I walked through that vast and maddened landscape, I sought to record my journey. Oh, the hubris of man who tries to map the whimsy of the gods. Each time I turn my eyes to this page, that which greets me is different to the previous viewing. Verily, it remains unchanging whilst my eyes are upon it. But when I close this book, the continents shift and flow, and the landmarks dance upon the page, never coming to rest twice in the same place. Alas, I fear that I may never leave this infernal hellscape. How can there truly be a road home, if the worlds drift and dance in such a manner?
We shall now delve into the grim nature of the gods themselves. The first amongst the dark pantheon would be Khorne, the blood god, lord of skulls, and the hunter of souls. He is the god of war and stands as the utter representation of carnage, rage, and hatred, all made manifest into a colossal humanoid creature possessing the face of a rabid and snarling dog. Most demons within his palace would likely not even see his face, however, as he's completely enveloped by gigantic plates of thick brass and black iron armor, all of which are adorned with spikes and snarled faces. Beneath his helm, there exudes a glowing crimson light, almost as if the god himself was ablaze. He sits atop a vast brass throne, which itself is at the peak of an uncountable mountain of skulls, claimed by his champions from every species throughout time and space. By his side rests his chosen blade. It is a gargantuan two-handed sword, known to some as the Woebringer and to others as the end of all things. This sword, once swung, can cleave reality asunder, allowing his demonic legions to spill forth through the gaping wound to bring his glorious rage out into real space. Furthermore, the trail left behind from the slices of this blade are known to instantly ravage the minds of mortals, causing them to fall into an incurable frenzy of seeking nothing but the blood of their allies, all in the name of Khorne. Throughout all of time, every single species and every single civilization has been built on the bones of those who were killed in the name of conquest. No matter whether a war was waged for territory, religion, ideology, for resources, or simply for the sheer thrill of it, we all have the stains of blood somewhere across the vast tapestry of our history, and each time this has fueled Khorne and ascended him higher and higher within the warp. Even if our ancestors did not recognize the Dark God, he has manifested himself within every culture as their god of war, or as the silent driving force which pushes them further and further towards conflict. To some ancient tribes, they may have named him as the spirit of martial conflict, but make no mistake, it has always been none other than the Blood God himself. Khorne has been empowered since the first echoes of rage and anger reverberated across the galaxy. When man first slew his brother, Khorne was there. When man first hurled a rock at a fleeing antelope, Khorne was there. And now, as mankind wages war across the stars, with untold trillions dying each day, Khorne is there, reaping his bounty of souls and adding each claimed skull to his towering throne. Khorne is fueled and empowered by anger, jealousy, rage, conflict, the desire to dominate all others, and of the desire to kill. He will bless his followers who spill blood in his name and will provide the greatest of boons to those who can claim the greatest number of skulls to honor him. His gifts will be rather simple in that their sole purpose is to enable a follower to better enact violence in his name. As such, for a successful Khornate cultist, they may find their muscles swelling to twice their normal size, and their temperament will likely become far more fixated upon killing, maiming, and burning all who they encounter. Khorne is not only strengthened from acts of senseless violence and bloodshed, as it is through any type of conflict that he gains his strengths from. As such, it is no wonder that he is an inescapable part of life for us as mortals. Whilst you may believe that you are participating in a battle for just or righteous reasons, each time you kill an enemy or feel the flames of hatred filling your chest, then this energy is what gives Khorne his power. Even but the smallest of arguments between two brothers would provide some nourishment to the god of war, as there is always the possibility that the argument grows beyond a small squabble into a glorious act of bloodshed. An important point to mention is that Khorne is also given strength through some emotional energies which are rather more positive than simple acts of violence. He can just as much be seen as the god of war as of the god of martial honor. There is no greater glory to be found than in single combat with another opponent. And any who is courageous enough to stand before an enemy with no tricks up their sleeve will be sure to garner the attention of the Dark God. In this sense, a true champion of Khorne should have the potential of being an honorable and fair warrior. However, this is scarcely found to be the case. Far more glory can be brought to the god of war by simply engaging in acts of reckless slaughter, and as such, you should never associate yourself with any who are suspected of following Khorne. In all likelihoods, they will simply see you as another skull to claim for their god. With this all in mind, it is no wonder that Khorne is considered to be the strongest of the dark gods, since the utter scale of conflicts within the galaxy is sure to swell him to the highest levels of power within the warp. It is also unsurprising that perhaps the most prevalent cults encountered throughout space would be of those who follow the Blood God. We all feel anger, and we all feel the burning sting of rage, to which a demon of Khorne will happily whisper into your ear for you to do more, and to escalate every situation until you are drenched in the blood of your foes. As previously stated, his followers are blessed with mighty physical boons, which make them far stronger than what should be possible in a human. But from this strength comes a terrible curse. Almost every prisoner of Khorne within the inquisitorial dungeons have degraded into nothing but mindless hulks who are utterly consumed by a rabid hunger for battle and bloodshed. They likely do not even know of their own name or why they are imprisoned. But all they seek is the vicious act of ripping and tearing whoever they can get their bloody hands on. Much like the Blood God himself, his realm is an utter manifestation of war and strife. The cragged mountainous land is scarred by vast fissures and craters, with new canyons ripping themselves into existence from the immense earthquakes which shake the region. As the blood-soaked ground rips open, vast torrents of lava erupt outwards, spilling over the sea of bones and skulls left from the eternal battles between lesser demons. The skies themselves are filled with perpetual crimson storm clouds, which will vomit forth a deluge of blood to soak whatever demonic entities have found themselves within this hellscape. Rivers of molten brass and boiling blood continuously flow down from the mountain tops, forming small natural divides in the landscape, which bloodthirsters and demon princes fight over for dominance. With each roar from Khorne himself, the landscape will shudder and shake as new mountains and rock formations shaped as blades force their way through the hellish ground to pierce through the clouds. Legions of demons will call this place their home, but it is in their very nature to rage and make war. If one were to look down upon the realm of Khorne from above, they would see an uncountable number of scarlet demons clashing blades with each other. They would see the vast packs of multi-headed hounds bounding through the landscape, with each maw carrying a different demon to devour at a later point. They would even see the flying hellspawn known as bloodthirsters, who in a single sweep of their colossal axes could fell 100 foolish demons who ever thought they could stand before one of the blood god's chosen warriors. The demons are forced to not only contend with each other, for as we have learnt, the landscape itself seems to be their enemy. The ground will open up beneath them to swallow entire legions of blood letters up before spitting out huge globules of molten blood against any who were straying too close. Mountains will seemingly crumble, causing landslides and rock falls to fall upon the demonic hordes. To actually look upon this realm would be maddening. There is no place safe here, no place to run, and no place to hide. It has been designed and formulated by Khorne himself purely to be a place to fight and to die.
This is Inquisitor Hothwald with a directive. If one is to capture a follower of Khorne, then simply put the rabid beast down. There is nothing we can glean from its wild ravings. Interrogation methods are wasteful when it comes to an individual who would happily bite off his own tongue if it meant that some semblance of blood had been spilled. You should know that you are doing the Emperor's work and enact their final sentence. Death.
The next of the gods would be Nurgle, the Plague Father, Lord of Decay, Master of Pestilence, and the Great Corrupter. He was thought to have been the third of the gods to gain sentience within the warp, at a time which corresponded with an ancient period of human history where holy terror was still known as Earth. During this time, the world was ravaged by a wave of horrendous disease, where the populace was almost brought low by one incredibly noxious plague, during a period which ancient remembrancers have coined as the Middle Ages. To gaze upon the sight of Nurgle would be to inflict one of the most disgusting punishments upon yourself. He takes the form as a gigantic, pustule-encased humanoid who has become utterly bloated beyond all normal recognition. His ragged skin peels away to reveal oozing cysts, which burst forth in a pop of rancid, infectious fluids before swarms of giant flies crawl their way out, only to buzz around the dark god in a troublesome halo. His very organs spill forth onto the grounds before him, with hot gases and acidic fluids weeping through what can only be described as rotten intestinal tracts. With each step, new chunks of his body decompose and fall off with dull thuds around which nurglings and lesser demons will frolic and sift through, all to be closer to their plague father. His gaping maw is ever stretched into a strange visage of a smile, and it is said that the god will often burst into fits of raucous laughter at seeing his beloved demon children playing around his cauldron. This brings us to an interesting point, and it regards the supposed connection which Nurgle feels towards his followers. As an inquisitorial source, I must take the stance that Nurgle is not a loving figure, nor is he a graceful liege to those who have succumbed to his plagues. His very being is innately tied to suffering and death, and most would agree that his actions have resulted in more deaths than perhaps the rest of the dark gods combined. His plagues have swept through our kind since the earliest days of our history, and entire wars have been forced to a halt due to the sheer virulence of disease found within its soldiers. Nevertheless, I am compelled to tell you of how his cultists feel towards his might. For those who worship Nurgle, they see him as a tender, caring, and thoughtful god who loves each of his children equally, so long as they exemplify and exude his teachings. They believe this because Nurgle has promised to them the twisted gift of an extended life. Their bodies may become racked with noxious disease, but they will never falter. The same plague which causes their organs to rot and liquefy will keep them up and ready to march forth, where they will spread the touch of Nurgle through infecting all who they encounter. Furthermore, in some ways, his worshippers will praise him for completing the cycle of life to death. Since dying is an absolute inevitability, why should they not worship the god who promises to gently lay them down, painlessly, and in a state which will allow them to bring forth more life in the form of maggots, flies, and virulent disease? Now, that is just the hazed belief of his followers. Nurgle himself will likely revel in the thought of death, and he will be brought to a state of jubilant euphoria at seeing the galaxy rot and decay into nothing but formless detritus. Within his realm, he is most often to be found working over a vast, rusted cauldron, in which he will brew up diseases so malignant and so pernicious that the populations of entire star systems may be reduced to an ocean of walking corpses simply from one individual becoming infected. Between his cauldron and his abhorrently disgusting gardens, he is the source of every single disease to ever afflict our galaxy. And he will take great pleasure in seeing his work spread throughout the innocent and humble citizens of the stars. Nothing will bring him more joy than to see his purulent fungal growths appear within the pocked and mottled corpses of the Imperium, and we must be forever vigilant against his foul presence. To some degree, we all fear death. During our lives, we will all be forced to endure some form of disease, but we know that it is a burden which we can shoulder, and that it is not worth considering an alternative fate in which we are not strong enough to handle that which afflicts us. That dark thought, however, which we have buried away so deeply and ignored so carefully, is something which further fuels Nurgle's power. He can be seen as the embodiment of our fears of mortality. He is the gnawing truth behind life, in that we will all meet our ends one day, and that no matter what we may do to try and fight it, that our souls will be claimed in one way or another. Rather sickeningly, within his foul gardens, Nurgle has trapped one of the last surviving Eldari gods within a gilded, albeit rotten, cage. He is the foul overlord of Isha, the Eldari goddess of fertility and healing, who was stolen from the grasps of Slaanesh after a cataclysmic war between the Prince of Pleasure and the Plague Father. Do not pay heed to heretical texts which describe him as being caring or loving towards Isha, for she is nothing but a prisoner to the bloated god. Nurgle will infect her with every single disease which he has formulated within his cauldron, and she is but a test subject for him to observe the symptoms which manifest within her. Since she is the goddess of healing, she can cure herself, but he will take note of how much effort she requires in order to do so, and this will allow him to further refine and improve upon his plagues before releasing them into the galaxy. If an infection seems rather weak, then he will not waste his time with it, and will simply return to his great cauldron to cook up a new deadly pox before testing it again and again upon Isha until it is ready to be released into the stars. Some inquisitors who have spoken with the enigmatic Harlequins say that Isha whispers the cures of all diseases down to us mortals so that we may be cured of such ailments. But we must wonder if we can really trust the words of Xenos, who would just as gladly converse with us as they would orchestrate our own downfall. Nurgle's disgusting generosity is gladly given to all who worship him. His followers will find their bodies utterly racked with the most noxious of diseases, but they will feel no pain. They will find themselves compulsively urged to set out into their communities, all so that they can spread their loathsome and putrescent gift to any who they encounter. I urge you all, do not be so foolish and small-minded as to think that a disease from Nurgle is anything close to a gift. It is a malady. It is plague. It is death. You must know, in the very depths of your soul, that the followers of Nurgle care not for anything other than to spread their contagion throughout the entire galaxy, all for a pestilent and blighted god.
Make no attempts at capturing a follower of Nurgle. Their taint runs so deep that their mere presence will surely infect the entire inquisitorial dungeon. Maintain your distance from any who are suspected of harboring plague, and order your retinue to activate their flamers. The sentence shall be death by fire.
The next god of the Dark Pantheon would be Tzeentch, the changer of ways, the great deceiver, weaver of destinies, and architect of fate. Whilst the other gods may be slightly easier to understand, Tzeentch is by their very essence an impossibility. They represent the ever-changing and constantly shifting ways of the universe. Their all-seeing and all-knowing eyes have watched us since time immemorial, and it is said that Tzeentch knows every possible outcome from our own tumultuous destinies. Being an ever-meddlesome entity, we must wonder, did they pull on any strands of fate to bring us here? Or are they simply content to watch our own failings from within the warp? The other gods have adopted rather consistent bodies and forms. However, by their very nature, Tzeentch is rarely seen under the same guise more than once, and will instead shift and warp their form in concordance with the tidal flows of their quasi-magical plane of chaos. Those who have reportedly communed with the Changer of Ways always give different accounts of how they actually appeared. Some claim that he appeared as a multi-limbed avian creature sitting in a lotus position with three heads, each spouting different impossibilities which contradicted each other. Some have claimed that Tzeentch stood as but a simple human, covered in a flowing robe, which rapidly shifted through colors never seen in this reality before. Other reported accounts have described Tzeentch as but a chaotic cloud of smokes, from which faces and creatures would manifest to utter out a phrase before dissolving back into themselves. We will never truly know of the real appearance of Tzeentch, and perhaps this constant shifting guise is an innate behavior of the god, in which case we would do well to avoid falling for its poor magician's tricks, if we are to ever encounter it in person. We as mortals may like to think of ourselves as being free, and the knowledge that we may choose our own paths in life will bring many people some semblance of comfort. With that being said, however, we must ask, did we really choose our own path if a silent force was ever pushing us in that direction? Whilst yes, we would be the ones who committed ourselves to that choice, but perhaps it was beneficial to a darker force for us to do so. And even though we did not realize it, perhaps we never even had a real choice as to which path we took. The reason I say this is that Tzeentch sees and hears every possibility throughout the galaxy at all times. They know the infinite variations of the future, and of the infinitely different faces our society may don if certain choices were to be made. When a person is contemplating as to a decision in their life, even if they are committed and determined to take one action, there is oftentimes a tiny whisper in their mind urging them to consider an alternative. That whisper will be from none other than Tzeentch. The god will be orchestrating an intricate series of schemes and plans purely to bring what is to be a beneficial outcome into existence. Their whispering will be cunning and manipulative, all to twist the foolish mortal into unknowingly doing the bidding of the dark gods. Sometimes, however, Tzeentch will simply interfere with one's plans simply for the joy of watching change unfold upon a world. There does not have to be any true benefit to their actions, but as long as they result in a state of existence where there is more potential for change, then they will take it. Truly, it matters little of what events are actually occurring within the galaxy. But so long as the pawns upon the great chessboard are ever moving, then Tzeentch will be content. Or maybe this is all a lie. We truly do not know how to even begin to understand Tzeentch and their indecipherable ways. If our theories are correct, then it is not so far-fetched to assume that every single action taken throughout the galaxy has in some way been orchestrated by Tzeentch for their own benefit. Perhaps we are but toys in some cosmic game, and that our actions today will somehow reverberate through time, only to manifest into reality 40,000 years into the future, to benefit a capricious scheme of Tzeentch. Since our actions are directly tied to the landscapes of the warp itself, maybe every action we perform in reality has been predetermined by Tzeentch simply to weave the ephemeral energies into their own favor, somehow aiding them in winning the great game. If this idea is true, then it would be somewhat of an inevitability for Tzeentch to emerge victorious over the rest of the pantheon. In practice, though, it surely stands as an impossible thing to conceptualize. I know not of how we would even begin to understand what a Tzeentch-ruled cosmos may look like. We could perhaps hypothesize that their victory would stand as but a flowing ocean of possibilities, where every single entity stands in a superposition state with every other entity, allowing them to interact in any way and at any time. This could mean that two beings on either side of the galaxy could engage in love, war, cooperation, or destruction just as easily as they could with someone standing next to them. Truly, the interaction would not matter, just as long as the twisted strands of fate had become so intertwined that the universe held the greatest potential for variant futures to occur, and that change was an ever-present occurrence. Only then, perhaps, in this confusing and muddled state, could we say that Tzeentch had won. Now, before jumping to a state in which Tzeentch has succeeded, let us attempt to look upon their realm and discern what it is that we can actually distinguish from the ever-flowing tides of the warp. Deep within the domain of Tzeentch, the landscape will often morph and shift into an infinite sea of crystalline structures, all of which appear to turn in and grow through themselves, jutting out at angles so bizarre that no architect in the galaxy could ever conceivably fathom as to how they were erected. Legends say that there exists a labyrinthine maze around Tzeentch's personal dwelling, and that the endless paths each have the potential of leading a visitor to the universe's most treasured secrets. That being said, however, navigating this maze is no simple task. A demonic creature known as the Guardian of the Maze resides over this realm, and it will manifest as a vast hovering mouth which floats above 9 immense gates within the deepest depths of the labyrinth. If one somehow manages to reach one of these gates, then they will be questioned with one of the 999 riddles of Zaratoth. But if you are incorrect in your answer, then you will be cursed to forever wander the maze for all of eternity, with your mind destined to degrade into insanity for having lost out on achieving the omniscient knowledge kept within. Legends tell of only one being who has ever managed to circumvent the maze successfully. The story tells of a young girl who, along with her canine companion, answered each of the riddles correctly, and so was granted passage by the gatekeeper through to the center. But none can be sure of what she actually gleaned from this most treasured of libraries. The legends say that when Tzeentch questioned the gatekeeper of how she passed this trial, that the demon accused her of cheating, but perhaps her success had been long ordained by some esoteric scheme from the Changer of Ways. The actual location in which Tzeentch is said to reside in is known as the Impossible Fortress, which supposedly exists at the center of this crystalline maze, even though its ever-changing topography seems to disprove the existence of a center existing as a concept. This ethereal castle can never be looked upon for any significant amount of time, as the way that its walls collapse and rebuild in different formations would surely drive a mortal mind to madness in their attempts at understanding how such a structure can even stand. Its immense towers open up into gaping mouths, which belch forth multicolored fluorescent flames as they screech out the fabled answers to questions never asked. Within this citadel, it is said that Zench owns a hidden library containing every scrap of knowledge ever conceived throughout the galaxy. Tomes of alternate histories exist here, with each being as believable as reality itself, and one could easily lose their minds by spending but a day reading through them. To know of where to seek out information here would clearly be of a great boon to any who sought power, but thankfully the librarians and demons who call this place a home are rarely known to divulge the true secrets of the warp to any who would foolishly seek it out. An important and interesting point to recognize is that the Dark God of Fates stands as the ultimate adversary to Nurgle. Zench is empowered by possibilities and of the intertwined destinies brought about through the strands of fate, but then the influence of Nurgle results in only one inevitable end, and that would be death. Even when living, the followers of Nurgle are encumbered by the stagnation of disease, and they lose the abilities which they once possessed, having their essence replaced only by a desire to spread pestilence and plague. Zench, quite obviously, detests the fact that Nurgle can so easily rob them of the vibrant possibilities of change through but a simple infection. On many occasions, complex plots of the scheming god, which had been set in motion decades prior, have been foiled and ruined by an errant spread of pox through a planet. This disease simply wipes the slate of possibility clean, and it leaves no room for one's fate to be interpreted as anything other than an inevitable slog into decay.
Trust not a follower of Zench. The mere presence of their cultists is surely a part of some plot which we could never hope to fully understand. In order to best safeguard ourselves, the worshippers should be sentenced to death immediately, and no further thoughts should be wasted. Lest the architect of fates begins with their capricious whispering.
The final god of the unholy quartet would be Slaanesh, the Dark Prince of Pleasure, the Lord of Excess, and She Who Thirsts. Make no mistakes about Slaanesh. Though they are the youngest of the Dark Gods, they should not be underestimated to any degree. Those who fall under their tempting sway will find their eyes wandering to forbidden places, with their minds being utterly consumed by dark thoughts of hedonistic decadence. The other three gods are rather undeniably horrifying to look upon, but Slaanesh stands alone as a figure of impossible beauty within the hellscape of the warp. The sight of her divine magnificence defies all mortal logic, and to look upon their alluring frame would drive most into a frenzy of insatiable madness. Even some demons struggle if they encounter Slaanesh within their palace, and it is not uncommon for lesser hell spawn to simply melt before the overwhelming pulchritude which stands before them. It is said that Slaanesh takes the form of an elegant, androgynous humanoid, and that the utter exquisiteness of their face borders on terrifying to those who would see it, for none could have ever imagined such a fair creature to have existed within these depths of hell. Amidst their flowing strands of luscious, glimmering golden hair, two great curved horns will jut out, which are oftentimes to be adorned with the most precious and extravagant of jewels taken from the immaterial realms. Now, an appearance is one thing, but the Dark Prince carries themselves with an aura of seductive swagger that only a being of perfection could possibly attain. Even the most prepared of mortals would find themselves emotionally disarmed at encountering this living edifice of beguiling charm. Legends even say that if one was to truly look upon the face of Slaanesh, that they would lose their very souls, and that they would throw down their aspirations of conflict to become willing slaves, who would seek nothing but to serve at the feet of the Lord of Excess for all of time. As I had stated, Slaanesh was the youngest of the four gods, and their calamitous birth was one of the most significant events in our galactic history, since it not only caused the formation of the Eye of Terror, but it also directly caused the downfall of the star-spanning Eldari Empire. Their civilization had reached a point of despicable stagnation around the 25th millennium, where their people had turned from a once prosperous and thriving consortium into one which only prioritized a life of decadent overindulgence. The Eldari cared for nothing beyond their own pleasure, and most retreated deeper into their palaces to simply explore new and more depraved sources of gluttonous excess in order to sate their growing thirsts. It was due to these actions that Slaanesh first began to manifest as a burgeoning force within the warp, where they fed off of the desires and dreams of the Eldari, rapidly gaining power at an unprecedented rate. By the 30th millennium, the Eldari Empire had devolved into little more than a network of pleasure cults, with only the more stoic and level-headed of their species having fled to the far Exodite worlds, or to the craft worlds, to be far from the disgusting acts which were taking place in their old homes. It was at this time, however, that Slaanesh was finally strong enough to burst forth into immaterial life. As the Dark Prince gained sentience, they let out an immense scream which reverberated across the galaxy, driving psychers of all species to madness at this cacophonous rapture which bore through their feeble minds. The sheer magnitude of the psychic implosion caused by their birth resulted in reality itself being torn asunder over the Eldari homeworlds. The vast warp rift known as the Eye of Terror ravenously spread out over the core of their empire's space, where any and all worlds were consumed and set upon by Slaanesh demons who gladly tore into the supple and weak mortals in order to claim their lives. The Prince of Pleasure, in their birth throes, devoured billions of bloated Eldari souls with utter glee, savoring the ancients as a true delicacy of the galaxy. In addition to felling the mortals, Slaanesh also proceeded to feast upon the pantheon of the Eldari gods, resulting in the almost total destruction of their faith. The Laughing God still remains hidden deep within the webway, and some say that the war god Cain has endured, but that his ephemeral form was shattered into 1,000 physical shards, which make up the constructs that we now know as avatars upon the craft worlds. The goddess of fertility and healing, Isha, was also spared from death, but as we know, she found perhaps a worse fate within the warp. Initially, Slaanesh captured Isha as a prized trophy, who was to be kept within their palace to serve the Dark Prince for all of time. Her cries, however, attracted the attention of Nurgle, who waged a long and terrible war against Slaanesh in order to free her. We have already explored the Plague Lord, but there are still some who claim that Nurgle may have taken Isha as something of a consort and that he may have some rather strong affections towards her. If this is the case, then keeping her locked in a festering cage within his putrescent garden is a rather odd way of expressing his love. To return to Slaanesh, at a fundamental level, they represent excess in all things. They will exemplify the feelings of pain and pleasure, taking each of them to the utmost heights, only to leave you craving for so much more. This is ultimately where they gain strength from. Anytime a follower of Slaanesh seeks out greater and more extreme ways of fulfilling their desires, then they are fueling and feeding the sickening engine of the Dark Prince. Rather sadly, Most people will not even realize that they are falling down the slippery slope of Slaneshi's sycophancy. If a rogue trader sets out on an expedition purely for the sake of wealth, then we must ask, what do they intend to do with their newfound fortunes? Perhaps it is not the actual money which interests them, and perhaps a covetous Slaneshi demon will whisper to them that they should focus on the actual feeling of desire itself, and that there is far more pleasure to be found in the forbidden secrets of the flesh than through foolish jaunts of treasure hunting. As such, the trader may decide that he will be more content with converting his void craft into a pleasure barge, in which we can only speculate as to what horrific acts would unfold within its metal walls. The concept of ever increasing that which you desire is a hallmark of the Dark Prince's influence. You should learn to be satisfied with having achieved your goals rather than seeing it as an opportunity to seek out new and more extreme pleasures. Oftentimes it will manifest in individuals being compelled to enact ever more depraved acts as their new desires become more outlandish and more despicable. It is not unheard of for those who have fallen under the sway of Slaanesh to shun their families or turn upon their communities simply so that they can drink forth from the golden well of excess once more. Any form of pleasure can be twisted and contorted by the Dark Prince in order to empower them. Every moment taken is one which could be filled with a new heightened experience. Every bite of food could be a new cuisine, with each being more succulent and orgasmic than the last. Every breath of air could be of a new wondrous scent or sensation, all of which would drive your brain to new levels of unknown joy. This is an important aspect of Slaanesh worship, in that their followers will inevitably seek out the absolute boundaries of what forms of pleasure they can experience. And then through heretical worship, they will seek to break through these meaningless limitations only to reach a new forbidden state of bliss. Whilst there will ever exist limits to a mortal's imagination, the influence of the warp will allow their adherents to invent new delights from deep within the immaterium, all of which will be indulged upon simply to sate their ever-growing gnawing for more excessive forms of pleasure. It is rather difficult to give an estimate towards the influence which Slaanesh holds over the galaxy. Entire worlds have fallen to their sway, with hive cities becoming naught but pleasure palaces, strewn with the bloated and desperate bodies of cultists seeking their newest thrill. Entire legions of noble Astartes, along with their fallen Primarch, have succumbed to the vices of Slaanesh, and if one of the Emperor's own children is fallible to the Dark Prince's influence, then we really cannot say as to where their power truly ends. It seems that wherever there is a lust for pleasure, that Slaanesh will surely have their nails dug deep, and that they will revel in whatever sick method someone conjures up to reach their new plane of passion.
Agents, heed my call. Do not bother with taking a Slaanesh follower prisoner. These uncongenial cultists know nothing beyond seeking their next thrill. There is nothing but sickening ravings to be gained from listening to their incoherent babbling. Simply execute the foul heretic and be done with it.
This shall conclude today's studies into the Dark Overlords of the Warp. There are other minor gods to cover, and there is far more information to learn on the specificities and intricacies of the Immaterium. However, these are to be covered another day. Worry not, however, for if you are to complete the psycho-indoctrinations, and if you can prove to the inquisitorial agents outside that you are to be trusted, then you will be ordered to return, where you will learn of how we can traverse this hellscape for our own benefit. Dearest of citizens, you are now in the possession of knowledge which has been made forbidden to most of the Imperium. I truly hope that the Inquisition was correct in choosing you to hear this. But if we were somehow wrong, and if you are intent on following down the dark path of chaos, while disappointing, I worry not. Their agents will surely find you and rectify their mistake with great haste and remorseless tenacity. If you are to ever consider betraying the Emperor's light, then understand that you will be shown no mercy.